Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show, so stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.
This is To The Point, a Rhino Experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
I'm excited to be asked back again, so I must not have been too bad last year, so that worked out pretty good. But I did ask for a little bit of help this year, and it was, could I select the panelists? So I get to interview a lot of business owners throughout the entire year of all shapes and sizes. So I feel like I got a pretty good gauge on who I think is movers and shakers in the industry. So Ken and I were talking about a potential topic for this panel, maybe 3 months ago or so. And we felt like, if you guys haven't watched the news lately, the news really, really likes you to think that there's this massive downturn in the economy coming. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But it certainly is a topic that comes up often. I've had lots of conversations around it, so we thought this might be a great panel to have. And so I have some questions I'm gonna ask these guys before I bring them up, but I also wanna encourage you, if you have a question, we are gonna have a mic to pass around, so I will save a little bit of Q&A at the end. Depending upon how long Ken talks, if I ask him a question, that will be the indicator on how many questions we can actually get to. But so this is how to win the game in a down economy or recession. The reality is that even if it doesn't come, or if it's smaller than we think it might be, it's still going to be tactics that are going to make your business better. Are we all good with that? All right, cool. So I'm going to bring up our first panelist, CEO of Gettle, Mr. Ken Goodrich. Come on up. Hey, this year, don't take my water. Last year, you took my water.
I'm taking your water.
So we put you on the end this time, keep you out of trouble. Next up, we have our CEO of Service Champions, Mr. Frank DeMarco. Frank, come on up from the West Coast.
So you take
my
water?
Hey, so far, so good. Yeah, he can take your water now. Wait, who's next? Brian. My friend Brian. So Brian Sloan's from out of Chicago, T.R. Miller, CEO. Bring him on. My friend Chad Peterman from Peterman Brothers out of Indianapolis. Come on up, buddy. So real quick, before I hop into any of these questions, I want to just tell you why I picked these guys for this panel. I wanted a little bit of diversity in this panel. We have some beasts. So I don't know if anybody got to hear the podcast I did yesterday with these two, and it was a clash of the titans. But it actually was them being very sweet to one another, so that was real entertaining and cute. Ken Goodrich was being so sweet to Frank. That was the first question I asked him. Was I said, hey, Ken, what does Frank or Service Champions do better than you? And it worked out really, really well. So you have to listen to that podcast. But obviously, two massive players in the industry have made a, Ken was known for taking these businesses and fixing them and growing them and scaling them. Been in the ringer a long time, both these guys. I'm super close with all these guys. I know all their stories. I know their business ventures. I know a lot of the things. So Brian is in Chicago and has had some exponential growth over the last few years, done a lot of things right, but still learning, right? Still smaller business. Can I say how big of a company you are?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I think he's right around the 25 million mark or somewhere in there?
Yep, yeah, so 2017 we were about 2.5 million, and then this year we're pacing for 35 million is where our goal
that
is.
That sounds way better than 25.
Yeah.
So sorry for messing that up.
Oh yeah, yeah. You forgot 10 million.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. But different perspective, right? Kind of been through some things from a different perspective, different look. And then my friend Chad Peterman down here, if you don't know who he is, I'm sure his company, Peterman Brothers, is, blew up the last few years as well. Where are you getting up at?
Finished right around 90 million last year.
Got it. Yeah. So just a couple. You fell short of 100, so.
I know.
You should be disappointed in yourself. Anyhow, I wanted to have some different perspectives, right, of different size companies. And this was a great panel to have it. And because I understand a lot about these guys and kind of their thought process, I thought this is really good stuff that's valid. There's a lot of influence that's out there in social space in general, and I always get concerned on what are you being influenced with, and is it right, and is it legit accurate? So I trust these guys, and they've got the credentials to do it. So we're going to hop right in. And the very first question is, I mean, this whole thing is how to win the game in a down economy. So first question to you guys is, who thinks there's actually really a market correction coming? Is there actually going to be a recession? Is this a thing that's really going to happen, or is this just media?
I think it's the media. I would say you can't be naive to think that there's, you know, clearly there's things going on. The Fed's dealing with the rate, the macro environment's uneasy. You know, for us, as we try to acquire businesses, the money's more expensive. And so you feel that pressure. I think from a consumer standpoint, we haven't necessarily felt that in any of our businesses in different parts of the country. But we keep our eye on it. I mean, it's not something that we just say it's never going to happen. I'm picking on the media, but it's like every day you get up, and for the last 6 months, it's going to be there's a pending recession. Maybe some of the markets I travel to, I don't see it, but I can't get a dinner reservation. The hotels are all jammed. You know, I mean, people are still spending money, and we haven't seen. I think we've had more of a headwind in terms of just what's going on with climates than we've had of anything. So. We're prepared for it if it happens. We view it as an opportunity, but I'm hopeful for everybody that we don't have to actually deal with it.
I think we're can you hear me? I think where we're already seeing it, though, is the financing approval rates. And I think that's a leading indicator for what we do. So you keep, you know, you really got to track that metric and make sure you understand it. I had another experience back in 2011. So, you know, we went through the Great Recession, 8, 9, and 10, and then 11, you know, we thought we were heading the right way, but the financing approval rates dropped significantly, almost 20%, and that hurts, which requires you to take some different sort of action, I guess we'll get to in the later questions, but that's where I'm seeing it currently. So, you know, there's some things going on. There's going to be some pressure on our type of business now through that. Anybody who is dependent on using financing for their business. Is anybody else seeing that, the approval rates?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing for our approval rates is we've seen it dip about 5 to 10 points of approval rates. I think we were tracking around 94%, and we've seen it slip down to like 85%. So that's something we're keeping our eye on.
That's a big number.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing on that is every March we do like a 401k continuing education. So we bring for our entire company we bring in financial consultants, and they kind of do like a 1 hour like presentation of what's going on in the marketplace. And so they really dove into some of the reporting. And so I think, you know, one common thing we've heard the last couple of days is that, you know, there's for every one person, there's two job openings. So there's still a demand for job openings. But there's also this GDP conversation where, I forget the graph he was showing me, but essentially like the gross domestic product of the US of what we're producing is right on track for what the consumption is. So we're still not specifically keeping up with GDP. We're not producing enough material still to keep up with consumption. So they were tracking some of that reporting as well. So from a data standpoint, it doesn't look like there's a recession, at least what we're seeing. I mean, money's tightening up in the home, right? So financial rates, commercial lending rates are increasing. The Fed's kind of doing what they want to do by slowing down purchasing, but all the, you know, objectively, that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, or, you know, just like these guys said, it's, you've got to keep an eye on things, obviously. You can't be naive to the fact, but I think that on the reverse is you can't be afraid of it. It's going to happen, it's not going to happen, we don't know, but to me, the way that you safeguard yourself is that, as I tell my team, we are not participating in any sort of recession. We just won't. And so what do we need to do inside our business to keep growing? It's not, you know, hunker down in a hole and hope that it passes by. It's how do we continue to improve what we do on a daily basis? At the end of the day, we're not closing 100% of our calls right now. We're not at the average ticket that we want to be at. So what do we need to do? Where do we need to dig in and find small improvements that will help, you know, kind of weather the storm. But I think the most important thing, at least from my perspective, is that you just have to put an emphasis on growth. Regardless of what happens, if you're not growing, you're dying. And you'll die really fast in a recession, as opposed to, you know, continuing to move forward and continuing to pay attention to those little things in your business that, you know, aren't great right now or could be better. To me, that's kind of our outlook and perspective on things.
But to that point, there's going to be competitors that get scared. There's going to be competitors who tend to retract, and that's when you push the throttle full forward and double down on your marketing and go take some more business.
That's what I was going to say. Took my water last year, taking my answers this year. Okay, so let's just assume that this is a thing, right? So I agree with you, but I think it's a mindset game still. But let's assume it is coming. What's your first move?
Well, listen, I think that everybody should be operating their business, even through, let's say through, 2020, 2021, 2022, very robust years. We operated as if we were in a recession at all times. We focus on our costs, focus on efficiency, focus on every innovation that we possibly can to drive every bit of cost out of your business. And you should be playing that game whether it's a big fat market or a recession market. So now we're going into, if we are going into something, we're ready and prepared. We don't have to make big changes. It's very difficult to turn a ship around on a moment's notice. So you gotta make sure you're playing the efficiency game day one. Make sure that you're priced right. I can't tell you how many contractors that come and seek me out to talk to me about their business. And the first question I ask is, how are you pricing your service? Which is going to be a very important component to a down economy. You're really going to rely on your service base. But is your service base, one, priced correctly, and are you driving the right proper behavior with your service business to hit the efficiency and productivity metrics that your pricing formula demands, contemplates to get to your budgeted net profit? So that's a really important game, of which we all should have been playing in the fat times too.
I'd agree. I'd say you need to run your business all the time, maybe not thinking of the recession, but you have to be efficient. You said this yesterday on the podcast. I couldn't agree more. If you are watching your costs, you're constantly, you know, you're constantly keeping an eye on spends, what your pricing models are doing. We have companies like Ken in different markets, so we're constantly keeping an eye on that, but you have to be efficient running the business. You know, be data-driven, be metrics-driven. My belief is exactly the same as Ken's. Like, we're always thinking about how can we capitalize on what's going on in the market. And I think we talked yesterday a little bit about, we came into this year, you know, we said we didn't think there was gonna be a recession. I added money to a budget saying, if I need to use that marketing, I want to have it. I want to have enough dry powder to go get it if I should need it. But not because I think the business will be down, but because typically private-owned businesses, the first thing they do is retract. And then we mash the gas to try to grab share in those times. I was with Horizon Services back in 08, 09, and they did it then. They used that exact phrase. Mark Aiken and Dave Geiger said, we aren't going to participate in this. And we doubled down on our marketing. And so I think you have to be prepared at all times, but if you're running your businesses efficiently, Chad said this, we're not scared of anything. We're cognizant of it, but you've got to be on it all day, every day, no matter what's going on, you know, with economy. Economy can be a headwind, but we view it as an opportunity.
Yeah, and I think just following, well, one, we were talking earlier, Frank, I think the most important thing is, you know, it's been a challenging Q1, but like really creating momentum for your team, right? Like you know, the biggest thing we should be doing, it's all mindset. The data says that we're not going to a recession, but if we do go there, tying back to your question, is what would we do? So one thing I've learned over the years was every like percent counts, right? So like if you get 100 calls, what are you doing with those 100 calls, right? Are you capturing, you know, 30%, 40% into a booked lead? And just, I mean, every single call I think counts. And I've really looked, you know, before it's like, oh yeah, you know, maybe we didn't have the best CSR team. But really, as I've gotten, you know, more mature, I say, into the role is like really tracking your marketing spend, you know, making sure you find good partners for marketing that can give you the results you're looking for. And just try to, you know, with marketing, cost per lead. So am I getting more leads and is it costing me less money, right? So trying to fill that funnel, and then what are you doing with those? So just following the data and just continue to build a pipeline around it. We met with, we actually met last week with some of our operators, and we said, all right, let's run a few different scenarios. Because not all, like, you know, oh, we're not getting the no heats or the no coolings. And so we use that as a crutch to, you know, say why we're not doing good, but there's so much opportunity in, you know, tune-up inspections. So there's things you can, you know, crutch on, I guess is my thought, is follow data, every call counts, and make sure you're just trying to get a little better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just as they've said, it's really just paying attention to the drivers of the business. So I think while everyone in this room can agree, okay, yeah, we're not going to be scared, well, what's the first excuse that you're going to hear from your service manager, from your ops manager? If things aren't going well, it's, well, you know, it's a recession. No one's buying. I mean, we've all heard it already. And I'm like, all right, guys, let's cool the jets here. And so it comes back to accountability and, you know, first leading that charge of, hey, guys, we're gonna be okay. But at the same time, how often are you reviewing the metrics? So, you know, when we first started, it was a dry erase board, and we'd have a green and a red marker, and every service manager would have to go up to the board every morning at 8:15, and they would write what they did yesterday, how many calls they converted, all of this, and if they hit their goal, then they could write it in green, and if they didn't, they'd have to write it in red. Now we've got fancy boards, and it looks really cool and all of that stuff, but just a simple exercise like that, it takes 15 minutes to do each morning. But how powerful would that be? How much, you know, motivation could you provide your team if you're reviewing your numbers every single day and it's just win the day? Just win this Wednesday. How do we do that? Let's just focus on that. Let's not focus on how do we beat a recession. Let's just win one day at a time. And through that, will ultimately beat out a recession or, you know, whatever it may be that we don't know. How do we win today?
By the way, let me just say this. Chad said it early on. There's so much in all of our businesses here, there's so much fat and waste. You know, we're talking about a potential recession when, you know, we need to look inward and look at the fat and waste in our own organizations. I mean, there's not one, I guarantee nobody in this room has one perfect metric out of the, you know, 6 to 10 that you're really focused on in your business. And so, you know, I would challenge you to start really looking at that and paying attention to that detail every day. I can't tell you how many guys I've met over the years who was almost ready to close their doors in their business, and their only move was they sat in their contact center for a year and listened to what went on and started to direct traffic and started to fix some things and tighten up the business just by sitting in the contact center. Same thing applies to all the other metrics.
Okay, so I will say this. It's not always marketing's fault. I wouldn't need to say that.
It's always marketing's fault. I mean, they say, all my guys say to me, we don't have the leads, we don't have any leads. I'm like, what about these six metrics?
Case
there's $100,000 right there. Yeah.
Well, the volume that you're
but
looking for.
But it's still always marketing.
Yeah, well, of course it is. I've heard that for years. Obviously, it's been 15 years of me doing digital marketing for HVAC companies specifically, so I can just about guess on which months all the call volumes are going to go up for us. But I hear, for those who don't know, we have about 800 customers across the US, Canada, Australia, all home services companies, and we listen to every single phone call for every customer. So I hear all the mess that your guys' companies are on the CSR side, and we ignore it so frequently. Or you do something about it short term, and then you let it ride again, and you do something about it short term, and then let it ride, and you see call volume or booking rates increase, decrease. Why? Like, there's a lot of really good organizations that could do this coaching. Like, so sometimes just looking internal is the answer. Because you got to get, you know, you have to start running a little bit more lean
in those moments. But so do you guys add, like, so again, assuming there's something coming, or market correction, or whatever you want to call it, do you just sit tight on the services that you're offering currently? Do you add any new services? Do you modify anything to you know, make it more appealing or better or whatever? Like, what's the play? Certainly, you don't add new services, right?
Yeah, no, I think thinking from my seat is, I think the important thing is to focus on what you already have, right? Like, what are you operating with what you already have instead of looking at, because if you add a service or a branch location, that costs you equity or costs you money, it costs capital to do that. And so really just taking a look at first, what are you doing with what you already have? I think when me and Ken sat on that podcast a year ago, you know, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but usually it's like, what are you doing with what you already have? Why get into plumbing if you're not a successful HVAC company? Like, just focus on that. But to tie back to your question is, so that's what we're doing is capitalizing a little bit, so trying to grow our market share, right? So in our current market, if we're trying to drive 100 leads, well, that's what we're going to do in that market. But if you can add, you know, we went to a new market called New Lenox. Sorry about that. And, you know, new customers, like, look at your new customer acquisition. So that's something we've done is gone into new, we've expanded our current market and gone into a new market to help drive new customers.
Yeah, I would agree. I wouldn't add anything right off the bat. There's probably, you know, as they said, there's probably a lot of fat on whatever it is that you do now. One of the things that I would caution you to is that while they're all grouped together as trades, they're all completely different. The people are different. It's a completely different thing. We learned that the hard way when we added plumbing and thought that it would be just like HVAC, and then we had to tear it down three different times down to the ground before we built it back up. And so I just think, and you know, not to belabor a point, but you know, what is it that you can get better at with what you're doing now? You know, can we convert at a higher rate? You know, looking at one of the things we've looked at on from an HVAC install side is how do we build value and increase average ticket? So right now we only really offer like three SKUs of product on the install side. So you look at a gas furnace and an AC, we offer three SKUs, but we offer six options. Well, those six options are just dressed up with all of the things that build value, whether that's a humidifier, UV light, duct sanitation, all of these things that build value. So can you take what you already do, look at all the other offerings, and start to dress that up? To me, that's been a huge kind of uptick in average ticket. And if you can get more money out of each home, well, then that's going to help you continue to grow. And there's a lot of opportunity. You look at plumbing and water quality and different solutions there that you can still do more. You can still offer more solutions with the same exact people that you have. You don't have to go find some new trade to offer into the home. And I think that that's been really powerful for us. In our growth is, again, just focusing on how much can we drive in each home by offering more solutions to the customer.
By the way, here's somehow a way that I've reconciled this whole thing in my mind, and maybe it's easy for you guys to think about. We're not in the air conditioning business. We lead, manage, and sell skilled labor. That's what we do. So think about that and all the aspects of that, AKA herding cats, but you know, what are all the elements to lead, manage, and sell skilled labor? And if you stay focused on that, you know, obviously there's materials that go with every job type, but if you really focus on that, that is where all the costs and the inefficiencies and the unrealized opportunities come from, right, is the mismanage of the skilled labor. So I think really that's where you zero in on the business and make sure that you clearly understand that every guy has to be making a profit or gross profit contribution every single day. and then you try to maximize those contributions and build the team such that the collective group can cover the overhead and the profit motive of the month, quarter, and year. But, you know, talking about adding different services, this and that, there is just so much opportunity inside the basic standard HVAC shop, because they're not lead managing and selling the skilled labor properly. I don't think there's a lot to worry about trying to add another service. I will say, though, that I believe that every HVAC, certainly a home service company, should, the HVAC guys should own the water heaters. I think that should happen. So, I mean, that would be an easy transition. And another way to sell more skilled labor that doesn't require retooling, rethinking, and retraining a big skill.
I think the only, yeah, I mean, no different than anybody here. We aren't going to add any services. We're going to focus on attachment rates. When you're just selling an HVAC system for us, is it going to be ductwork, insulation, et cetera? I would tell you the one thing, and I'm sure these guys all do it, I'm quite sure because we talked about it earlier, is we have an extensive amount of training on financing. When I say extensive, you have to be good with numbers and roll it off quickly when you're in the home. We finance 50% of our installs. And so we have some really great finance partners, but, you know, and we can think we can do we can do more with that. I just say that, you know, no matter what size your business is, that's something really good to have as a tool. I don't think, you know, if you just look, our metrics are average ticket goes up with those who finance more because people are looking at payments, and we're a payment-driven society. I mean, that's just the fact. People can't all stroke a $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 check, whatever you're selling them. So in order to add those ancillary products or attach things to it, we get really good at financing because it's a necessity. And there's great programs. It's in the home now. Financing is regular. You see it with windows, roofing, HVAC, plumbing. So I think that's the only other thing I'd add is just, you know, make sure you have a focus on it, not just have it as something that's there. Hey, maybe I can get this finance. Excuse me. I think it's financing an offering going in, because for us, we track average ticket against how much is finance and specifically who's doing what, and there's a correlation there with average ticket going up with how much the person's financed.
I can't even imagine now. You know, I talked to a lot of contractors who don't even use financing. In the home service business, it's just absolutely essential to lead with financing. It's not $18,000 for the, you know, 20 SEER system. It's $287 a month, and that's how you lead the business.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're over 80% financed.
Yeah, we're over 80 as well. It's crazy.
Yeah.
We've even got to the point, and I'll don't want to belabor the point, but I think what Frank said is so critical. Find somebody that is really good at financing and understands it really well and can teach it to all of your technicians, all of your, even CSRs. I mean, we've gotten to the point now where we have a special group in our call center that when a lead comes in that is for a new system, and we're moving it to other things, when a lead comes in for a new system, we have specialized CSRs that are good with financing that are getting people pre-approved before we ever go out to their home. It's getting them in the mindset, and it's just always talking about payments. We don't present any solution as a, this is your full dollar amount. It's always, it's $100 a month. It's $120 a month. It's $75 a month. Whatever it is, it's just ingraining that in the culture of your company and teaching it. Because I'll tell you, when we first started, I didn't understand zero payments, this and that, and what's a payment factor, and all of these things. Like, really dive in and understand that so that you can explain it to your customers, because it is, yeah, I mean, through the first quarter, we were, on new installs, it was 83% of our jobs were financed, mainly because we're just leading with that. That's the only option. And don't think you're going to scare off the guy who wants to pay with a check. You know, that guy will tell you that he's going to pay with a check, and that's perfectly fine. You'll take that too. But you're not offending anybody. And there's some great word tracks that you can use to not offend people. It's, hey, most of our customers use our low monthly payment options. How would you like to pay for this? Super simple. You're not offending anybody. You're not assuming that they need financing or they can't afford anything. You're just telling them how most of your customers pay. That's all. But the financing is, that's a great point, for
and
sure.
Think about what he just said. They get the customers pre-approved before they run the sales call. Don't you think, what's the closing average on that call where they're pre-approved? Probably,
it's high.
Probably right up there with three numbers, right?
Yeah.
By the way, it's so interesting to me. I started, you know, coming to ACCA in the 80s and, you know, struggling with my business. And I joined this community, and there was guys that reached out and helped me kind of get out of my funk and understand the business. But when I started, it was Manual J and Manual D, and I'm looking at all the technical stuff. Think about all the things as we sit up here and talk about and what Chad just said, that we really have to know to run this business, and has really little to do with Manual J and Manual D. There's a whole other plethora of information that you have to really understand to lead one of these businesses.
I'm gonna just piggyback on what you guys are talking about. The financing piece, if you're not utilizing it right now, even on the website, like, this is the easiest, this is the low hanging fruit. Anytime someone calls in for, I need more leads, the first thing we go to in spring and fall is these low as monthly numbers for financing. It's hook, line, and sinker. It works. It's worked for 15 straight years. It's not going to work. The psychology of the homeowner is not changing, like, on how they choose their company. Nobody wants to call you in the first place, right? So, and they just certainly don't want to stroke a big check for it if they can finance it too. I'm saying the majority, that's what we're seeing. But even before you talk to them, you can get them pre-approved before they even reach out to you. So just by putting in the different financing offers, it works every single time. So you just got to make sure you put that right number on there, because the downside is, if you have a marketing company and they think they're being slick by putting a low monthly number on there, the odds of them actually getting approved is probably pretty short. So you just sent someone there, they couldn't get approved anyway, so you just wasted your money. I've seen this happen time and time again. So putting a $49 a month thing is not going to pan out like you think it is. The lead volume's gonna look real good, but the close ratio is gonna be absolute garbage. So I will give you a little nugget, because I've tested this number over and over for a lot of years. Do not go any lower than $79 a month. All right, if you're gonna put a monthly number as low as, obviously there's many variables that come to this, but once you drop below that, that's when we start seeing the close ratio significantly dip. I don't know what it is, that's just the number. I tested everyone from 65 to 72, to like over all these years, that one seems to be the sweet spot where it seems like it's the nicest, got the nicest close ratio, but still lots of conversions. So just something we've tested for a lot of years to think about. Obviously do what's best for your business, just telling you what's available to you. But if you have, you know, and there's lots of financing options right now, but if you have the link where you can get them pre-approved before they even have to call you, please put that on the site. It doesn't cost you anything extra to do it anyway. So just get it on there so that way they get that done and then they call you and you have a pre-approved amount. So that's my soapbox for a minute on that piece. I will ask you guys, do any of you guys do leasing? Lease anything? Is it even like a consideration, or is this something that you could bring on if this goes into that space?
We don't do any. We, you know, I have some really good operators that are regional vice presidents. They came from a platform that did a lot of that. We just don't believe in it. We think we can get there with the leasing options, or with the financing options rather. So it's not something I can see in the foreseeable future for us. Mm-hmm. I just want to add one thing on financing is, keep an eye on which plans you're gonna offer.
Yes.
sorry, if I could give you a tidbit. Leland Smith, who founded Service Champions in 2000, he's our chairman today, he would say, Frank, you can't, and this is all the owners, but if you just offer them everything, they'll go to 60 or 72 months, 0% to the customer. It costs you, you know, give or take 14, 15, 18 points. Limit what you're staff can see, or what their options are. So just, we're pushing financing, but there is you got to put some rails on it, because next thing you know, you're like, yeah, I'm financing more, but I didn't factor in, you know, paying this cost. So sorry, just want to make sure I made that point. We have six plans. They're different in our locations, whether it's Cincinnati or Texas, you know, or California, they're just different. But watch what those costs are. Get, you know, work with your finance companies. That's just something I wanted to add, because if you go back and just offer financing, it can get, those costs can get away from you in a hurry. But sorry, I want to make sure I got that one out there.
Yeah, sorry if there's any distributors in the room, but don't listen to your distributor when they tell you, I've got a special deal for you on 0% for 72 months. There is no deal in that entire offering. Don't be afraid to offer your customers plans with interest. Like, think about it. If I'm a payment buyer, I've probably got other payments in my life, namely a credit card, that I'm paying 30% interest. So when you offer them 10% interest, that's a hell of a deal. Do not offer what your distributor says that they got you a deal on. There is no deal involved in any of that.
How do you really feel?
I feel that way. And I'll tell
got
you
a little more passionate about that answer.
Well, I mean, it's a real life example. We used to do that. We used to fall for that. We dropped our financing as a percentage of HVAC install revenue. When we offered those plans, our financing cost was about 8% sales. Today, we don't offer anything without interest over 12 months. We don't use anything that charges us. I mean, there's a couple plans that charge like a fractional, like dealer fee. Our percentage of HVAC install sales is 1.27% of sales. So if you want to pick up 7 points, don't offer those plans, ever.
I know we got off the leasing question, but I mean, everybody wants to hear. You got to tell them. Sorry,
that's right,
you got to tell them. Like, look, we say all of our experiences. You know, I've gotten to know Chad over the last couple of years. Amazing business, what he's grown. Ken's done it for years with Leland and Dave Geiger. I've been three generations doing it, and it's expensive at the front of the pack. Like when you try to get at the front of the pack, it's expensive. So the goal here is, right, to figure out how to be smarter at your business. And so we've all stubbed our toe, you know, numerous times on these things. So sorry that we got off your topic. Sorry, Ken, you're going to say something too.
Are you really sorry?
The leasing programs I've looked at are no different really than the financing programs we use today, except the finance companies, you know, going to monetize that end of it a little better, and there's really no benefit to us that I see. I know that there's a scaled business, you know, close to $1 billion in sales in our industry that went out and got their own $250 million line, and they executed the leasing model themselves, and they're having a lot of luck at it, so they say. But that's a whole nother business, man. That's a whole nother layer of complexity that you add to your business. You're adding a financial model on top of the, you know, skilled labor model and
revenue recognition, and how does it all work?
Yeah, it's a difficult strategy. So right now, when these finance guys are coming to you and say, why don't you lease it? The only one benefiting in that equation, as far as I'm concerned, is them. That's how I see it.
So are you going to leverage any new technology? Like, because there's obviously so much tech that's happening coming into our space. What are the things that you guys are seeing or even considering? I know we had some of these conversations, you guys had some good stuff, but we can use technology to help make our businesses more efficient too, right? And make us run better businesses and become more profitable. What are you guys looking at in regards to new technology?
I guess something I've been really focused on over the last few months is, right now I'm studying call center, so that's maybe earlier I was giving some context on call center. But just looking, there's a lot of automation software that can tool on top of your CRM. So, you know, really looking at every opportunity as a sales funnel. So starting to look at, you know, I'll just pick on cancel calls. So as odd as that might sound, we look at cancel calls and try to rebound those, but put them into an automated sales funnel. And so you can do this for unbooked calls, cancel calls, PROFU, so proposal follow-up. You can put all these different lead sources into a funnel, and then you can create drip campaigns. And so it might be, you know, customer calls, you don't book the call. The CSR doesn't book the call. We'll create an automated process where you know, the customer might get a text message from our, just create an automated text message process where, hey, Mrs. Jones, just want to make sure that the CSR gave you all the information. And then automate it where, you know, maybe, you know, half an hour later they get a voicemail drop to their inbox. And so really looking to create this automated process because we have an inside sales team who's doing all this manually. Well, that costs a lot of labor. We're looking at how can we give them the tools, no different than we give technicians, drills, hole saws, but give our inside sales team or other, you know, areas of our business the same tools we give technicians, and how can I maximize all these opportunities? So we're creating like different sales funnels for all different types of leads, lead sources, as I like to call them. So that's how we're looking to leverage it.
Anybody else?
Well, I'm on a crusade to change the club membership model, the service agreement model. You know, once you get up to a certain scale, a certain number of club memberships that you need to manage, you know, you kind of hit a wall. You know, you have to have a large group of technicians that don't really bring in enough revenue to support themselves to manage those clubs and really do the service for your customer and, you know, achieve the goal that you set out to have by having club membership customers, which is a captive customer base. But that to service with the old model, the current model, I would say, is very difficult at scale. So now we're delving into the use of technology. We're partnered with SmartAC to start deploy a smart maintenance model where we're predicting, we're using the technology to predict when to run a maintenance call as opposed to, you know, twice a year in the different intervals, and start to track, you know, what are the most greatest opportunities for maintenance calls based on the data, and really transform the model more into a just-in-time maintenance and starting to collect data on people's systems to have more intelligent conversations about repair versus replace, things like that. So I think really the newest technology and where I think I would encourage everybody to start digging into over and above learning how to manage skilled labor is drilling down in this club membership base, really building a great base as kind of the moat around your business, but doing it in a more thoughtful manner where the use of technology is cutting the cost and making you more efficient to deliver the service to the customer.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I stopped to see SmartAC. We don't use it, but we've heard about a little more predictive. I've seen it before a couple years ago. It wasn't as good. It wasn't their product, but another product that was just, there's a lot to install, the cost, et cetera. This one seems very efficient. We will likely pilot that just because, to your point, you know, we have a lot of monthly paying service agreements. You know, where our business is based, although only half of it now is in California, you have to be able to do maintenance really well. There's no weather. It's gorgeous all the time, except for this rain we've had. So, you know, I think it's a good point. You get to a certain level, and it gets trickier to manage, and then who can you get to and who can you serve? But I think that's certainly one for us. The other one is that we just are starting to look at is, as technical and as many of us train internally, I know Chad's built a school, Leland Smith's built technicians for almost 17 years now. We've taken that to our different companies. When you lose control of what goes on once they leave your building in a training, and so trying to put yourself in the home with them, we feel like that's somewhere where we're going to end up more. And there's a couple companies in the country doing it. They record everything in the home. That gets tricky. California's really tricky, but if you can be there and you can have one service manager, and you know, I've looked at all the versions from literally a body cam to headset cams, you have a service manager watching what six guys are doing while they're recording the tune-up. It feels like a game changer, but you still have to have people there talking to the customer, et cetera. But there's a couple big guys that do the record, they use that technology and can help somebody through a call versus, you know, challenges on a call, et cetera. But that for us, there's a lot of red tape in those. But I feel like the predictive is big. And then two for us is how can we, you know, as your business scales, O'Brien's going through this, Chad's going through it, and they're all hopefully, you know, everybody's trying to learn. you know, I've been lucky. I've been with two individual businesses, you know, individual contractors that went from 40 million to over 100 million in a very short stretch of time. When you do that, you realize that the quality of the people has to stay identical. Back to Ken's point, it's like managing that piece. So the technology is going to be critical. Take a 100 plus million dollar business, and we have two of them, and try to get them to 200. You know, you're going to lose control of stuff when the guys walk out of the building. So we try to control as much of that as we can. But we don't use that technology today, but we're looking into, you know, what that looks like down the road for monitoring, et cetera.
By the way, in Southern California, where you don't have the weather, or any markets where you really don't have the weather to support the business, maybe you don't want to do predictive maintenance, yeah. Right? Because you really have to get to those houses. Yeah. You have nothing to do.
It's a good point for us that, and again, it's different all over the country. And I grew up in the East, so we waited on weather, if you will, which was not a good model. I know some of those guys still in there struggling with waiting on the weather. And Leland Smith, when I had known him for about 10 years, went to work for him, and he said, Frank, you got to get out of your head that we're a service business. We do service. We're a maintenance business. I don't have any weather here for you, for you to just run demand calls. So we have to do the best tune-up ever that's you can and show value to the customer. What we found is you can actually do that tune-up in different parts of the country, not just because we taught it to them. There were companies that decided to do it, and you're exactly right. For us, it's a 12-month-a-year run. There's 27,000 agreements just in the location in Brea. You have to run those calls every month. So it really good point, Ken. And, you know, in the West, in those parts, you don't have springs and falls. It's just you're running them year-round, and you have to for the opportunity. But
And to that point, let me say this. I learned a long time ago that demand calls are the pool keeps shrinking. You know, the replacement business is way up, so you don't have as many demand calls. Home warranty gets a big piece of our business now, you know, and then the typical handyman and side jobs and all this. The pool of demand calls continues to shrink every year, and so what I always tell my people, you know, just look at a demand call as a gift from above, because they're few and far between. Cool. We have to be really good at maintenance to modernization. We are a maintenance to modernization company. We perform maintenance, and when the system and the customer is ready, we'll modernize their mechanical systems. That's the business we're in. We're not dependent on demand business anymore.
Yes.
Yeah, I think from a technology perspective, I mean, agree with everything that they said. I would maybe just touch on a few of the easy ones. So, text messaging. I know that's not like technology per se, I guess. I don't know, maybe it is. How do your customers want to be communicated with? How many times have you called that customer and never got an answer? We have CSRs in our business that they don't pick up a phone. They just are on the computer texting with customers. If you go on our website, you can book an appointment for whatever you want in about 3 to 4 clicks, because that's how customers want to do it. We go to schedule maintenance. We send out a unique link to every customer, and they can book their appointment within about 3 clicks. Understand how your customers want to communicate. I know I don't pick up a phone call if I don't know the number. I'm sure a lot of you are probably the same. So why is your customer going to pick up the phone from a number that they probably don't recognize? So that's super simple, but it's effective when you're talking about getting a hold of customers. To their point, I think the monitoring is something that as you scale, it becomes more important. But I don't think that you're ever too small to start thinking about it. It's not going to hurt to have a set of data on that customer's system. And again, a lot of these are able to tell you when a system, you know, may fail or is looking like there may be an issue. How much more value can you provide your customer if you can sort of predict before it goes out on the hottest day of the year, and then you've got more customers and you've got technicians and you got people yelling at you and all of this?
if you can predict a potential failure in a off month, you know, how much more value do you provide to your customer if you're able to give them that type of service, as opposed to just being, hopefully being there and having enough technicians on the hottest day of the year?
I clearly see a day with the new technology like Smart AC. I clearly see the day when someone can figure out how to walk into any market, quickly grab 3,000 to 5,000 club memberships with some organization, the utility, insurance company, or some way, grab a universe of club memberships, deploy the technology, and be able to poof a $10 million HVAC branch in 1 year. I see that day coming soon.
You good? Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think I got about 8 minutes to go, 7 minutes to go. So I do want to, if we have a mic, Sarah, that we can walk around. Does anybody want to ask a question? And then, guys, if we can try and squeeze in two, that'd be great. So we got about 7 minutes. So anybody want to ask the panel a question? Don't be afraid. Everybody always is afraid to ask questions. I promise you somebody else is thinking the same thing. We got a hand up?
My question is, I heard you mention pre-qualify, all right, a customer before you even go. What is your procedure on that? What questions do you ask on the phone to see if you can pre-qualify?
That's a great question. I'm not really sure, but what I do know is the financing partner that we work with GoodLeap. They do a great job. Done a great job for us. It's a very easy form. So it is literally, I think, name, social, I don't even know. You don't have to put, the key is you don't have to put the amount of the job in. You just, they probably have to put their income, I would assume.
Yeah, but Chad, that's part of your portal, right? Your CSR is your CSR taking that? Because ours is, the customer can go and fill it out. It bounces them out.
Yeah, so our CSR will actually fill it out. For them on there, I believe. And then they can get them pre-approved. But the key is, like with, I think it was, there was a provider we used where you had to put the job total in. Whereas right now, even pre-qualified, we'll do it on the phone. But when our comfort advisors are going in, that's one of the first things that they're doing is, let's get you pre-qualified. And that way you know what range you can look at systems in. So it's a very little amount of information, and when you're interviewing financing partners, that's what I would look for is, what's the least amount of information? I don't need someone to fill out a 14-page form.
It won't do it.
Yeah, for sure. So it's very simple is the key.
Yeah, and I think that ties to the technology. You know, like there's a lot, like GoodLeap has a great portal for both the technicians and the consumer. So it's really easy, you know, it's no longer rocket science. And what is my payment? What's my payment rate? It's, you know, GoodLeap has a really good technology piece as well.
These finance companies that we deal with in the home service business are not really finance companies. They don't really hold the money. They're called fintechs. So they're financial technology businesses that provide the portal for you to sell financing, and the money comes from somewhere else. So it's already set up for you. Most of the companies, most of the larger businesses or notable businesses in that space have the technology for you to use and fill out and for you to follow the law. You know, and you gotta be careful. If you are running somebody's credit, I guess there's two types. There's kind of a soft check. What do you call it?
Soft pull.
Soft pull, where you don't have, doesn't require a signature, but if it's a full credit report, make sure that you have the customer DocuSign that they authorize you to pull their credit, or the fintech company to pull their credit. Very important detail.
Yeah, the soft pull is huge. So that's how we do it. It's a soft pull, and it doesn't ever show up on their credit score until they actually accept the loan that they're taking.
But that's a very important thing that you guys need to listen to. What he's doing here is that, I'm imagining, correct me if I'm wrong, they can look at their entire day schedule or week schedule and see who's already pre-approved for financing on sales calls, already pre-approved. and yet you have to assume everybody else is not approved, right? So figure out where to spend your time and manage your skilled labor appropriately.
I'm gonna try to get to one more question, so thanks, guys. Got one more question? Got time for more? Perfect.
A couple of you look like you might be old enough to remember, but what would happen if, like in 1980, the prime rate went to 20%, if you can remember? If it, say, between now and the end of the year or sometime next year, it goes to double digits. You know, let's talk about a real economy that you got to deal in. What would you do different to deal with those higher interest rates? Because the whole economy changes.
I look old enough to be remember 1980, but I'm not. But that's, you know, growing up doing this industry, I guess.
I had a mullet in 80.
I clearly don't have that luxury. So, you know, it's a really good question. I don't think we've really thought about it. I think it's challenging. You know, for us, there would be two components. One is, you know, as a private equity firm owns our business, and they don't write a check for that entire business. So we have to manage our own, you know, loans ourselves. And so that would be one challenge for us, because we're already paying more in interest on those loans. Fortunately, we can do it. The business generates lots of cash, but that would be a factor. Two is, I think with financing, you know, we've been hitting on it a couple of times. Like, you've got to figure out something. When people are desperate, you know, to do it, I think there's a number of financial engines or areas that people can go to, but you have to work and see what you can still do with financing, because people just will hold on to their cash, is my guess, or they're going to try to invest to see what the return is. I hope we don't have to have that challenge, but it's, you know, it's hard to think through if I would do something differently other than stick with my blocking and tackling, see what that headwind turns into and what the consumer's saying. And I would say for us, while there's private and, you know, private equity owned groups here and private businesses, we lean on what they've seen with their history and the hundreds of companies, their knowledge of that. But I can't say today I would know how to answer that other than I would keep doing the same things, you know, I've been doing that have made us successful, and then have to adjust based on what that headwind gives us and you know, continue to employ our management team and our partners to say, what else can we do? I hope that one is not something we have to tackle, yeah. But apparently it's still gonna be creeping up there, and we're dealing with a little bit of it right now. So I know that's probably not entirely answering the question, but I hope it's one we don't have to answer, quite honestly.
But if your sales conversions on your large tickets, your replacement sales drop, you know, you have to rely on your service business. And back in the 80s, we relied on the service business much more than we did the replacement business. And I believe that we all kind of get, when we really got good at this converting to a replacement business, it became an overused strength. You know, sometimes you see these businesses that are running 90% of their revenue coming from the replacement business. Man, that's a hard business to run. It's hand-to-hand combat every single day, hunt and kill on every single opportunity. It's a hard business to keep together. But back in the 80s, it was, you know, 10% replacement, 90% service. Maybe not that drastic, but it was certainly swung the other way, and those businesses survived and thrived very well. So it's kind of my overarching message even today is start digging into your service business, become very efficient and very productive with your service business, make sure you're priced right and be able to weather the storms that way, such as a 20% interest, as he suggests. And then maybe think about some alternatives to replacement, because you're not going to be able to get the higher tickets. How about a rebuilding the system, you know, update all the key components and give an extra warranty on it, something like that, which would give you a higher, you know, gross profit mandate contribution for a job that would be maybe the same or similar to a replacement sale of today without the cost of the equipment.
In 1980, I was one. So it wasn't really a thing for me, but great question. Thank you for asking it. Anyhow, how'd they do? How did our panelists do? We good? Anytime I'm giving a presentation or I'm always looking at the counter to make sure I stay on time because I think it's so respectful to stay on time. Once Ken starts going, it's like, okay, here goes my time because I think we were at maybe 1 minute to go when you started talking. I was like, here we go. But it's always good stuff. I could say for those who tune into the podcast, thank you. We have these conversations all the time on the To The Point Home Services podcast. And that's kind of what I've loved to do all these years is to try and give back as much information as I can to help businesses like yours. That's been my life for 15 years. And I've met a lot of really smart guys who are very much so wanting to help you as well. So they're up here asking questions. A lot of times people don't want to ask questions in front of everybody else because you're going to get embarrassed. I completely get that. But all these guys, you can reach them and ask them questions as well. They will help you. I mean, this is ACCA was so helpful to you in the beginning, you know, getting the business off the ground or just helping you. But take advantage of it. That's what they're here for. It's not don't be vulnerable enough to ask the questions that you don't know. That's how you get through some of these difficult times. So, ACCA, I appreciate you guys having me back again. Panelists, thanks for joining me. And I appreciate all you guys showing up because about 15 minutes to go, I was like, this place is looking pretty bare. So appreciate you guys being here and hope that you enjoyed the panel.
Listeners, thank you so much again for listening to this podcast week after week. We are extremely grateful. Again, the whole purpose of this podcast is to give back to the home services industry that we love so much, whether you're a rhino or not. We really, really appreciate all the subscribers. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please go in and subscribe and you'll get all the episodes sent to you automatically weekly. Also, we have really enjoyed your feedback. It's so meaningful for us when we get to read the nice comments that you guys put. So keep doing that. And if you don't know how to do it, here's what you got to do. You search for To The Point Home Services on Apple Podcasts. You click on our profile, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and hit write a review. And be honest and share your story and how the podcast has impacted you and your business. Thanks again from the bottom of our hearts at To The Point Home Services Podcast. We appreciate you. Welcome To The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show. So stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.